Good morning, and welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship's virtual Sunday service. We are also affectionately known as WOOF. Just a note that since it is summer, our minister, the Reverend Tracy Springberry, is away. We are sharing guest speakers within our congregation. My name is Rosie Hamilton, and my pronouns are she and her, and it is my privilege to be your lay leader today. You will find announcements in your order of service, and you're welcome to join us for the coffee discussion at 11:30. At this moment, whomever you and wherever you are, know that you are welcome here, regardless of your age or abilities, color of your skin or place of birth, regardless of whom you love, how you identify your gender, or whatever your spiritual practices may be, or if you have no spiritual practices, you are welcome here. This morning, we are local to this virtual community of conscience and compassion. And now, as I light the chalice, a symbol of our shared faith, let us consider these words from Jennifer Grayson, as shared at the UU Spiritual web app. We light this chalice, symbol of our purpose to bring more love and justice into the world. We light this chalice knowing that our congregation as a church dispersed across communities, not bound by walls, but connected through the web of life. Please speak with me our opening affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another. Our reading today is an excerpt from a reading by Reverend Pat Hordorfer. It's called, And How Are the Children? Among the most accomplished and fabled tribes of Africa, no tribe was considered to have warriors more fearsome or more intelligent than the mighty Maasai. It is perhaps surprising, then, to learn the traditional greeting that passed between Maasai warriors, Kaseeran Igera. One would always say to another, it means, how are the children? It is still the tradition greeting among the Maasai, acknowledging the high value of the Maasai always placed on their children's well-being. Even warriors with no children will also say, how are the children? And all the children are well. Meaning, of course, that peace and safety prevail, that the priorities of protecting the young, the powerless, are in place. The Maasai society has not forgotten its reason for being, its proper functions and responsibilities. All the children are well. Means that life is good. It means that the daily struggles for existence do not preclude proper caring for their young. I wonder how it might affect our consciousness of our own children's welfare, if in our culture, we took to greeting each other with this daily question, and how are the children? I wonder if we heard that question and passed it along to each other a dozen times a day, if it would begin to make a difference in the reality of how children are taught, are thought of, or cared for in our country. I wonder if every adult among us, parent and non-parent alike, felt an equal wait for the daily care and protection of all the children in our community, in our town, in our state, in our country. I wonder if we could truly say without any hesitation, the children are well. Yes, all the children are well. Today, WOOF members Annie Vigileos and Karen Stratton will tell us about their experiences as CASA volunteers, court-appointed special advocates. What they've learned about the world of children in foster care and the foster care system as it relates to our second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations.
Hello, my name is Annie Vigileos. Karen Stratton and I are here today to share with you some information about the CASA program in our area. CASA stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocate for foster children. The job of a CASA is to get to know the foster child, to get to know everyone in the child's life, such as relatives, siblings, teachers, coaches, etc., and to keep an eye out to make sure that the child is well cared for and safe, and to make sure that the case is moving along at a reasonable rate within the court system. Also, most importantly, to provide non-legal representation for that child in court. Cases usually last about 2 years with each child, depending on when you were assigned to the case. I volunteer at the Clackamas County CASA office, and Karen volunteers at the Washington County CASA office. I've been a CASA since 2012, and in that time, I've been assigned to 7 children, ranging in age from 10 years to newborn. I became a CASA because I was appalled at the occasional news stories about neglected and abused kids, and wondered what could possibly be done to prevent these incidences. I've since learned that neglect in the foster care system is an incredibly complex tangle. And while my ideas about prevention were quite naive at the time, the first step was for me to quit moaning about it, get off my rear, and become a CASA. I entered a training program in 2011 that took about 4 months. I passed an extensive background check and a number of in-person interviews. During this training period, I was given many chances to consider if this was the right job for me, and I was also being watched by the CASA staff to see if indeed I was right for the job. I love kids. They are just so incredibly important. And while I've done a lot of volunteer work through the years, I can honestly say that my CASA work is the best thing I've ever done. It's alternately frustrating and joyous, heartbreaking and heartwarming. It requires all of my passion, my empathy, my tact, my diplomacy, and my imagination. I never give up on my kids, so a heaping helping of tenacity is also very handy. Being a CASA is not like being a big sister or big brother. I am never allowed to be alone with my kids. I'm never allowed to take them out to a movie or to the park or out for an ice cream. I'm not allowed to give them presents for either birthdays or holidays. And unless they are babies, I'm not allowed to initiate any physical contact with these children, which would include touching or hugging. When the case ends, I'm required to walk away that day, and so I never know really what eventually happens to these kids. I have to believe that the work I did on the case has made a difference in the child's life, and I have to envision the appropriate turnaround in their lives that will lead to the best outcome for their lives with their parents going forward. Oftentimes, being a CASA is all about hope. And despite the difficulties and frustrations, I hope that I'm able to do this for many years to come. As mentioned, the subject of kids in foster care is very complex, and neither Karen nor I can hope to address it fully in this service. However, a good place for me to begin, I believe, is to offer a fairly simplified description of how a child comes into foster care and some of the many steps that follow. The majority of children are removed from their homes resulting from allegations of abuse or neglect. There is an anonymous hotline that one can call to report suspicions, and Child Protective Services, which is CPS, acts on those calls to either substantiate or dismiss the allegations. Those calls often come from neighbors, relatives, teachers, and medical staff. There are instances where newborns are taken into care directly at the hospital if they test positive for drug exposure. And there are also incidences where children are removed from their parents during some sort of law enforcement involvement. For instance, if law enforcement observes that a child is not safe while they are serving a warrant or investigating a noise complaint or pulling a driver over for erratic driving. If they see in any way, shape, or form that they don't feel that this child is safe, they will immediately call CPS to remove the child. Once a child is removed and placed into care, a whirlwind begins. a child is sent to a temporary foster home for a few days until a more long-term placement can be found. While the child is in temporary foster care, a more permanent placement is sought either with a vetted relative or an established foster care provider. The child is assigned a child protective services worker and will eventually be assigned a permanency worker. The child is assigned a lawyer, and the county CASA office is notified that a CASA is required for the child. The child will likely be seen by a medical professional to assess for immediate health concerns and will likely be recommended for emotional support therapy. So as you can see, this is a lot of strange stuff and a lot of strange people all of a sudden. And as you can imagine, this is incredibly traumatic and overwhelming for a child. Suddenly, they are no longer surrounded by anything familiar. They wonder where their mommy or daddy is. They wonder where their siblings are. And they wonder what's going to happen to their pet. Where are my shoes? Where's my blanket? If they are old enough, it's common for kids to ask two very elemental questions. The first one is, where am I going to sleep tonight? And the second one is, who's going to fix me breakfast? Very simple, but really heartbreaking. Once a child has been removed from his or her home, they are usually in foster care for about 2 years. During that time, they may or may not have the same lawyer, the same DHS worker, the same doctor, the same therapist, or even the same school or foster home. The beauty of the CASA system is that the child's CASA will be assigned to that case and that child until there is a final resolution, either returning to the parents or adoption. CASAs are often the one and only constant in a child's life during their months in foster care. A question that is often asked of me is what's going on with the parents for the time that the child is in foster care? Again, another fairly complex situation. But the simple answer is that the parents or parent has been assigned a lawyer. They've been to court, and they've had an opportunity to address the court regarding the reasons that the child was removed from their care. And then they plead to the charges. The court draws up a services checklist, which details all the steps that must be done and accomplished before the parent can be reunited with their child. While each situation is different, these steps often involve things like drug and alcohol counseling and rehabilitation, domestic violence counseling, and classes, job training, and the establishment of safe and sober housing. DHS works closely with the parents or parents to make sure that they have everything that they need in the way of resources so that they can fulfill their checklist in a timely manner. During the time the child is in care, the parents are allowed supervised visits with their children, often occurring at the DHS office location. Depending on circumstances, parents can also be approved for phone visits, texts, or FaceTime-type messages. It's always the hope and the dream that the parent or parents do the work needed to reclaim their lives and reclaim their children. But there are times when this just simply does not work. If a child cannot be returned safely to his or her parents, then the court plan changes from reunification to adoption. For myself, the two children that are assigned to me at the moment are heading towards adoption. And prior to these two kids, with the other five, one was adopted and the other four were reunited with their parents. So there are happy endings. As I mentioned before, there just isn't enough time to get all the many aspects of the foster care system and the CASA system into this one service, which is why we have developed an FAQ sheet, which you can connect to by way of this Sunday's order of service. If you still have unanswered questions or wish to speak to either Karen or I, our phone numbers and emails are on the bottom of the FAQ page, and we'd be happy to speak with you or to swap an email or two and answer all your questions. Thank you for your time.
Hello, I'm Karen Stratton, a member of WOOF. Like Annie, I decided to become a CASA in order to serve children in need and make a difference to the world. I had been interested in the foster care system since I was in law school in the early 1980s, but I never had the flexible work schedule to allow me to volunteer until I retired 4 years ago. CASA was the first thing I applied for, and for me it has been a deep and meaningful volunteer experience in line with our second UU principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. The children and their parents deserve justice when their relationship is at risk. And there have been many opportunities for me to practice compassion in a system that is not often equitable. For me, I appreciate that being a CASA is a volunteer experience that is substantive. I deal with important issues and draw upon my people skills, writing and advocacy skills, and my life experiences. And it's a volunteer experience I can often complete when it's convenient for me instead of at someone else's schedule. Since 2017, I have worked with 4 different children or youth from 2 different families. I'm still involved in both of the cases I took on in 2017. It is very unusual for children to remain in state custody for so long, and that makes my job even more important now, as there is pressure to find resolutions soon, and I need to make sure those resolutions are appropriate and not made hastily. A CASA's legal obligation is to meet with the children once a month. For the first couple of years, I met with the children in person, either at their home or at school. Sometimes I would show up at their after-school activities to see them enjoying a sport. But then one of my CASA kids moved out of state. Despite this, the case remained in Washington County, so we communicated by phone and later text. After COVID-19 started, I continued with text communication and even had one Zoom meeting, but it's really hard to keep a connection virtually. The kids are already doing Zoom for school and sometimes to visit their parents. Visiting with me isn't always a priority for them. It seems like it's been easier for me to keep in touch with the adults. We are more used to email and phone calls, and that's how I've kept in close touch with the caseworkers, foster parents, teachers, parents, and attorneys. This is really what I like best about being a CASA. The day-to-day work is usually to provide communication and support to the parties, as well as advocacy and persistence when needed. Each foster care case has a court hearing or a citizen review board hearing twice a year. Years ago, I served on a citizen review board, so it's familiar to me. CRBs are panels of citizens from each county who are trained to review foster care cases to relieve the pressure on the court dockets. They make the same findings that the judges do, which are basically, is DHS doing what's required to make sure the children spend the least amount of time in foster care? And is DHS doing what's necessary to reunite them with their parents? Or if that's not possible, is an appropriate alternate plan being prepared? Usually at these hearings, whether in front of the CRB or the court, I'm the person who has the most information about the case. I found that caseworkers come and go fairly rapidly, and case history is not always communicated well. The CASA also writes a report for each hearing. The report gives the judge or the CRB the background of the case, the reasons why the children are in care, what needs to happen before the case can be closed, and what I, as CASA, recommend for the next steps. The judges really rely on the CASA reports because we are neutral parties with only the best interest of the children as our goal. The children's attorney is legally required to represent what the children want, which may or may not be in their best interest, as you can imagine. And the parents have different biases as they view the facts and events. I mentioned that I went into CASA work to make a difference for children who are involved in the foster care system. It's a system that's full of inequities, lack of resources, people who may not be functioning at their best, and policies that don't always work to serve the kids. It becomes a challenge to figure out how to work within that system and be compassionate toward the overworked caseworkers and lawyers who just sometimes seem to be muddling through. Annie talked about the reasons why children enter foster care, abuse and neglect, but that abuse or neglect is most often due to parental drug or alcohol abuse. And if you know anything about addiction, you know it's often one step forward and two steps backward. And this is hard on kids, and it makes it hard to plan for their future. It becomes a balance between the parents needing time to make changes in their lives and the children deserving stability and a permanent home. It's been hard sometimes for me to have patience with struggling parents. So there's one of my opportunities to practice and learn compassion. Luckily, CASA provides a sturdy support system for the volunteers. I have a supervisor who is a paid staff person. She is available by phone or in person, pre-COVID, to talk through what I'm dealing with and to give advice or research options with me. Although I went into the work to help kids, I would say I have benefited in learning more about myself, my privilege, and what the reality of life is for people who were born in much different circumstances. CASA is serious about continuing education and hosts monthly group meetings in Washington County with guest speakers. Since all the work we do is confidential, it's important to have times when we can share stories and learn from each other too. One education session that made a big impact on me was learning from parent mentors. These are parents who have had their own children in state custody who now support other parents. I was blown away by their ability to forgive themselves and keep going. We all beat ourselves up when we mess up, but these parents had transformed that guilt and regret into a path of helping other parents who are in trouble. Another current issue for the foster care system, especially with the Black Lives Matter movement, is to examine the systemic racism of the policies and laws around foster care. There are obvious racial and economic inequities in the family services area. Children and families of color are represented in our cases more than their numbers in our population would predict. Often police are called to family situations in areas of poverty, or they are just policing more often in those areas. And children of color tend to get ensnared in the system, when wealthier, whiter families might have resources to avoid their children being taken away. They simply don't come to the attention of the police or DHS. CASA is serious about anti-racism and has provided reading lists and opportunities for volunteers to learn about and discuss these issues. At the staff level, the Multnomah, Washington, and Columbia County CASA organization is somewhat diverse, but it's probably not a surprise that most CASA volunteers fit my profile: retired, white women, and some men with education and financial resources. In contrast, none of my four CASA children have been white. There have been times when I felt like the work I do as one CASA is really not important. Times when I've thought, and I've even been told, that these children and families would have been better off without my interference. Feelings often run really high when people's children are involved and the state is prying into their family affairs. Depending on the ages and personalities of the kids, they can resent yet another person in their lives asking personal questions. Luckily, there are caseworkers and others in the system who take the time to appreciate what we do, and as I mentioned, our supervisors always have our backs. When I get discouraged, I think about the CASA program as a whole across Oregon and across the USA. Statistics over time show that CASAs make a huge difference. Kids have better life outcomes and spend less time in foster care when they have a CASA. And so I keep persisting, making more phone calls, researching more services, and reaching out to the parents and the children. I haven't had the satisfaction yet of a case that closed successfully, but I'm definitely looking forward to that event. And I believe in this work. It helps me grow as a person while serving children in need. When my cases end, I will definitely sign up for a new family. If you're interested in training to be a CASA, please contact Annie or me. We'd love to talk to you more about it. And thank you for listening to us.
I will share the words of Cheryl Block as I extinguish the chalice. As we go forward into the frightening, exhilarating, confusing, miraculous world, may we offer our comfort to the afflicted, our love to those who are lonely, and our wish for all to be safe.